Cards on the Table by Fictional Lemons. Rating is mature. No archive warnings apply. Category is male-male. Fandom is supernatural. Relationship, Dean Winchester / Sam Winchester. Characters, Dean Winchester, Sam Winchester. Additional tags. Post-episode, Season 15, Episode 19, Inherit the Earth. Canon Divergence. Season 15, Episode 20, Doesn't Happen. Hunter Retirement, Supernatural. Aging. Love Confessions. Curtain Fic. Pining Dean Winchester. Glasses. Kissing. Dean Winchester / Sam Winchester First Kiss. Happy Ending. Trees. Summary. After Jack leaves, it's just the two of them left in the bunker. Dean realizes what he wants next and decides to put all his cards on the table at last. Notes. While I don't mind the way the series ended up, I can't help but want to give them a little more time together. Maybe a lot more time together. And a retirement of sorts in the world they fought to defend over and over again. After Jack leaves, and it's just the two of them and a few ghosts, metaphorical ones, hopefully, in the bunker, it takes a few days of reassuring themselves that everyone's back. Relief-filled calls to Donna and Jody and Garth and new Charlie and new Bobby before they have to figure out what's next. Dean looks for jobs, but he has the sense that Jack's already been busy because there's not much, and to tell the truth, his appetite for dangerous situations has been mellowed by facing down death, watching his best friend get eaten by a black goo of nothingness, and having every creature on Earth magicked away by a god who'd snatched them away like a petulant toddler who didn't want to share. He needs a break. It's not long before Sam finds himself a project. He's finally going to organize the bunker's files, artifacts, weapons, get everything in a database, make the lore and supplies available to other hunters. He's wanted to do it for years, and now he has the time. They don't talk about it, but when jobs do come up, they pass them on. They aren't the only hunters, after all. Between Jody and Donna, Claire and the rest of that crew, the Pacific Northwest and Midwest are totally covered. There's the Southwest contingent, the Florida nut jobs, the folks up in Alaska. Sam occasionally takes calls, works leads, connects lone hunters who need backup. When he's not on the phone or computer, he spends most of his time in the bowels of the bunker, sifting through books and boxes. He decides they should track down all of Dad's old storage units, make sure everything in those is accounted for, too. Dean works on Baby, then moves on to the rest of the cars in the bunker's garage. He gives each one a once-over, makes sure they're running and not hiding any supernatural secrets. Dean wonders if maybe they should sell a few to save him the trouble of keeping them up, and Sam agrees easily. Dean finds a dealer to take some of the less practical models, is pleasantly surprised at the amount he nets from the classic car dealer he ends up working with. He puts the money in an actual bank account. He had to go to an actual bank and open up with his actual name. Another thing he chalks up to Jack. Dean and Sam Winchester are clean. Their messy history with various U.S. government institutions seems to be wiped out, leaving them with valid Kansas driver's licenses and real Social Security numbers. Weird. He never thought he'd see 30, and here he is, smack dab in his 40s. He used to think death was going to make everything okay. Then he died, and it turned out death was just another chess move, just another way to get the monsters. He and Sam both did their stints on the wrong side of that equation, but they always came back. They always fought for the side of right. Humanity. That was what they started fighting for. Along the way, Dean knows he stopped fighting for everyone else and started fighting for Sam. Now all that's done. He won, because Sam's still here. Dusty hands and creaky knees. Their youth is gone. Their days of staring death in the face, literally, are gone. They're just people now. Just like Chuck. No worse than him. Maybe slightly better. Jack gave them that. He gave them more than their names. He gave them their humanity back. The absence of Chuck gave them their autonomy back. they've truly got free will for maybe the first time. It's a sweet feeling, like drinking pure, cold well water after what feels like a lifetime of having a parched throat and dry mouth. He wants to keep that sweetness for as long as he can. Dean goes with Sam to clear each of Dad's storage units out, bringing back the best stuff to the bunker. Together, they safely dispose of the things that seem too dangerous to hang on to. They find actual cash money in a lot of them, random assortments of dollars and coins that add up to grocery money for the week. They find junk, too, yellowed paperbacks and old toys, and even some furniture that Dean cleans up and sells on eBay, once he makes sure there's no curses or hexbacks or whatever that he'd be passing along. The extra cash goes into the bank account. He's not sure what the growing balance is for, but it comforts him to know it's there. He tweaks his back, hauling a heavy box out of the Impala's back seat, and Sam tries, but he can't massage it out. He finds himself making an appointment at a clinic in town. He's not quite sure if they can help, but maybe he can replenish their supply of pain meds while he's at it. The intake nurse asks when his last physical was, and Dean looks at her blankly. The clinic has an opening on Thursday. Dean doesn't exactly know what the point is, but he goes. Sam's up to his neck cataloging stuff anyway and barely notices when Dean yells that he's going out for a while. At the clinic, they draw his blood and he doesn't think about Sam injecting his own blood into Dean's veins. They check his eyes and he doesn't think about blood pouring out of them. He gets a referral to an ophthalmologist. That wakes him up a little. What is this? Some kind of racket? He twinged a muscle and now he needs glasses? The following week, he sees the eye doctor and gets a prescription for readers. He picks out plain black frames and thinks about Chuck and when they lost their Winchester luck and 17 cavities, and he sighs. He guesses the downside of free will and not being puppeteered by the creator of existence is that his eyes are getting old. He doesn't have to wear them to drive, at least. At dinner that night, when Sam bends his head over the truly excellent burgers Dean's made, he notices his brother's going a little bit gray. The clinic calls with his test results. So his cholesterol is a little high. He feels fine. His back isn't even bothering him since he started doing the stretches the doctor showed him. But the next time he's grocery shopping, he gets turkey bacon and broccoli. And beer. Some things are non-negotiable. It dawns on him that real free will and regular people luck means he could get in an accident on the way home. Sam could have a stroke. So many things could go wrong and they aren't even hunting right now. He has trouble drawing in a breath, pulls over before he passes out. Panic attack. Death was always inevitable, but Dean doesn't want it to come too soon this time. He wants a few more years. He pulls his head up from between his legs, stares out at the flat Kansas horizon. There's a tidy farmhouse on the edge of a wheat field, a copse of trees to one side, a barn on the other. He doesn't want to spend whatever years he's got left underground, in a place that's been both a refuge and a prison. He still flinches when he sees the gouge in the wall from when he tried to kill Sam that one time he was a demon. While Sam's busy cataloging and labeling and inputting and uploading, Dean gets familiar with real estate apps. He knows how much they have in their bank account. They can afford a place. And not a ratty hunter's hidey hole. Dean wants a lawn and a porch, and so sue him, he wants a fucking porch swing on that motherfucking porch. He scrolls through listings and learns the lingo. Colonial and Victorian. Ranch and Mediterranean. Half bath. In-law apartment. He wants a house and a comfy chair in that porch swing. He wants Sam there with him. And he knows he has him. He knows it. Sam and him. They're good. Even if you could fill a library with everything they haven't told each other, haven't said, it's okay. He looks at a million houses in a million towns. He wonders if Sam would like to be near water, if not the ocean, then maybe a lake or a river at least. He should ask him. They could find this place together. But he holds back. He recognizes the uncomfortable feeling in his gut as fear. He's figured out that he's afraid of losing whatever this new reality is. But it's more than that. He's afraid if he tells Sam what he really wants, Sam isn't going to want the same thing. And hasn't that always been it? That Dean wants something Sam can't give him. But maybe. Maybe life's too short now. Maybe if their life was a choose-your-own-adventure, but they were never really making the choice. This time, Dean can choose something different. So maybe he should just ask. Ask Sam if he wants more, too. If Sam says no, he'll know, and he won't have to live however long he's got left, always wondering if maybe he'd said something, if he'd asked, that he could have had what he wanted all along. Sam's getting toward the end of the cataloging project, finally. He tells Dean he's got a few more updates to make to the database, and then if they want, they could get out of town for a few days. Dean nods, distracted. He's spent the last 24 hours going back and forth with a realtor in Kalispell, Montana. The two-story house gave Dean a jolt of recognition when he came across the listing. It's in decent shape, could use a little TLC. Dean figures he'll need something to occupy himself with. House repairs are a start. There's a detached two-car garage, and the property backs up onto a stream that feeds into the Flathead River. Neighbors down the road, but not within sight of the house. A lawn and a cherry tree in the backyard. From the pictures, it looks like the big upstairs bedroom looks out on the cherry tree. He thinks about lying in bed late on a Sunday spring morning, watching the cherry blossoms outside the window. That night at dinner, he's not exactly prepared to say anything about it or about the other things he's been thinking about. He's not exactly ready to blow up his life after veggie pizza and a salad. But then Sam says, "Dean, are you okay? You've seemed really distracted lately." He flashes his big eyes, trying not to seem concerned and not succeeding. Dean could deflect. He could explain it all away. But he feels an eerie kind of calm. Now is as good a time as any.
"Yeah,
He clears his throat.
"I have been distracted. I've been looking for a house."
"A house?" Sam sounds truly surprised. "What do you mean?" Okay, he didn't think he was going to have to get this remedial.
"Like a house, Sam. A place that's got a porch and view and windows. Not a defensible hole in the ground. I want air, and I want to read the paper without looking for jobs on my porch in my goddamn reading glasses."
"Oh." Sam doesn't seem anything as much as confused. "You want to move to a house?"
"I want..."
The words get caught in his suddenly tight throat. He breathes.
"I want us to move. I want us to be human and age and maybe forget about some of the shit that we've been through and eat better. And sleep with the windows open, and go for drives just because we want to, and not because we have somewhere to be. And I want something else."
His heart kicks up, but he's going to say it.
"So, just let me get there, okay?"
Sam gives him a funny sort of half-smile of bewildered encouragement. Dean reminds himself that Sam hasn't left him a dozen times when he should have. He's not going to leave over this. He's pretty sure. Anyway, he clears his throat again and starts talking.
"I just wonder, sometimes, if things would be different. How things would be different if I had said something earlier. Like when you went to Stanford."
Sam stills at the mention of Stanford.
"What?" "I thought about going with you. I thought about telling Dad to forget about us and just go with you. But..."
Sam fills in the pause.
"You couldn't leave Dad." "No, that wasn't it. I couldn't do that to you. You had your whole life ahead of you."
Dean had wanted, ached with want, ached with missing his little brother, ached with the suspicion that Sam wanted him to come, too. And he'd stopped himself every time he thought about grabbing the keys to the Impala and heading west.
"But sometimes I think maybe we could have made it work."
He looks up. Sam's brows are drawn together. He looks shaken.
"I had no idea."
Dean supposed he didn't, because Dean never said. "And that's why they're here now."
"There were other times, like when I came back from the pit. I could have just told you. I should have, maybe. But I was scared. Even after everything I'd done. Too chicken, I guess.
The sight of Sam after spending 40 years in hell, his body strong and unbroken, his face familiar and yet distant. He'd been in a different kind of hell the minute he came back, one that only eased when they'd found the bunker and some kind of uneasy peace with each other.
Anyway, all that's water under the bridge, and maybe it wouldn't have made a difference anyway, since Chuck was pulling our strings the whole time. But he's not now. And it's not like I don't have as much to lose. Maybe I have more. But I need to do this.
Do what, exactly? Sam seems like he's holding himself back from drawing any conclusions. Dean's going to have to spell it out.
I'm putting all my cards on the table, Sammy. And then you can pick them up or walk away, and I'll live with whatever, okay? You do what you gotta do, and I'll be all right.
Sam's frozen, gaze locked on his, and Dean takes a deep breath, forces the words out, over the warning beat of his heart that says this is going to change everything, and he doesn't know yet which way it's going to go.
So here goes. I love you, Sam. I know you know that, but you don't know what I want to do about it. I want to do so many things, and I have since you were about 13, and I know how that sounds, but, and I'm probably too old and creaky to do some of what's on my list.
Dean forces himself to look at Sam and not at the table as he goes on. He tries not to hear the emotion making his voice rough and tremulous.
But there are things I could do. I could kiss you every morning and every night. I could sleep in the same bed as you. We could watch the cherry tree outside the window together. I'd look at you, just look my fill, and more. But we're not geriatric yet. I'd undress you and touch every inch of you and follow up with my mouth. I'd love you, Sam, the way you deserve to be loved.
Dean's tongue feels thick with everything he said, but he pushes out one last thing.
If you want that, too.
Sam's face is unreadable. He says nothing. He moves not an inch. Dean's more disappointed than he expected to be. He hadn't let himself think about Sam's reaction, but he thought maybe there was a chance. He tries to be like Cass. The happiness in the saying of it. In the act of loving someone who deserves so much love. The honor in that. He tries to remember to breathe. He thinks about the cherry tree and the stream, and he believes that Sam will be with him there, even if it's in a room down the hall and not sharing the big bedroom with the best view.
Sam?
Sam doesn't move. Did he break his brother?
You're rocking that poker face, so can you give me something here?
Sam blinks. Not entirely broken, then. He speaks, rusty-voiced.
So you're saying you want me? You've wanted me for 25 years, not counting?
He doesn't need to say it. They both know what they aren't counting.
And you want to move out of the bunker. Into a house. With a cherry tree, apparently.
He's not throwing punches, and he's not running. So Dean answers him.
Yeah, a big cherry tree. Did you know they can grow cherries in Montana? Something about the microclimate next to Flathead Lake. We could drive to the lake, but we're closer to the river. The place needs a little work, but it's got a 2-car garage. Plenty of room for baby and my tools. We could have a vegetable garden, maybe.
He stops when Sam lets out a choked gasp.
What? Are you?
Sam hunches over, hiding his face, his shoulders shaking. Dean gets out of his chair, walks around to Sam's side of the metal kitchen table that still holds their empty dinner plates. His hand hovers over Sam's back, not sure if a touch will be welcome after what he's just said. Instead, he drops to his knees, feeling the cold, hard floor beneath them, relishing the sting. The pain distracts him from the way his heart's on the verge of breaking without his permission. He did this. He made Sammy fall apart, and he wants to regret it. But there's still a sense of relief in the saying of it all.
Sam.
He doesn't get more out because Sam's there, turning to him, cupping his jaw with his large, warm hands, pressing their foreheads together. Sam's face is right there, his scent flooding Dean's nose, and his cheeks are wet. And then it's not their foreheads that are touching, but their mouths. Their mouths. Sam's kissing him, firmly, confidently, with a quarter of a century of aborted touches and declarations and fantasies all bubbling up into a series of desperate, wet kisses and embarrassingly breathy moans, maybe a sob or two. It's a long time before there's enough air between them for anyone to say anything. Dean has questions, but Sam gets words out first.
You don't think we're too old?
Sam says.
Too old for what?
To start this?
I don't know. I don't care. I never thought I'd get a chance to get old. But it turns out I'm pretty happy to be headed for some downtime with my glasses and my porch swing.
There's a porch swing?
There will be.
Dean looks into his brother's beautiful, red-rimmed eyes, swipes at the moisture underneath one with his thumb.
Will you swing with me?
Sam smiles and says,
yes.
The following spring, the cherry blossoms only last for a couple of weeks, but Dean makes the most of it. He wakes up early before Sam can get out of bed and go for his every other morning run. He revels in the warmth and weight of his brother next to him, often half on top of him, while the breeze stirs the branches outside their window. Snow-white petals like 1,000 tiny ballet dancers shift and turn, bending on their delicate limbs, never breaking no matter how strong the wind gets. He watches them dance, and Sam snuffles closer, until registering that he's awake. Then the snuffling becomes kissing, and the kissing becomes rubbing, and before Dean knows it, he's had his first orgasm of the day, and the cherry blossoms are forgotten for a little while. He's sated and might go back to sleep for a bit. He doesn't have anywhere to be, after all, except right where he is. The end.